The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order.
This is the Zabe Cast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Feeling down and down. Here we go. It's a good thing I really don't care who wins or loses in the World Cup, because if I did, well, there's no way I could even bother giving a shit about it. The VAR hellscape that currently exists in soccer is beyond comprehension. And with that, I say, how you doing on a Monday, July 13, 2026? Thank you for joining me. Andy Polin coming your way in just a bit. But first, let me get into the weeds on the World Cup, because I know Andy's going to have just a cursory kind of a understanding of all this. And I had to dig in and make sure I got all the names right as I was watching the matches on both Friday and Saturday and enjoying them for the most part. But again, enjoying them because I didn't really care who won or lost the matches. So the way that VAR is now, it is akin to the great line in one of my favorite movies of all time, one of my favorite westerns of all time, The Outlaw Josie Wales, starring the great Clint Eastwood. In that movie, if you've seen it, you know the iconic scene in which, after their Missouri riverboat ride, they get together and they start deciding, well, how much longer are we going to hunt down Confederate soldiers and try to kill them to make right for what all has gone on? And the scene occurs when the Union forces, the Red Legs, pursuing Josie Wales and other former Confederates after the Civil War, has one character, Fletcher, suggesting that capturing or killing Josie would wrap things up and allow them to move on. It was then in which time Captain Terrell corrects him with the line of doing right ain't got no end, emphasizing that their righteous pursuit of the outlaws and rebels basically has no endpoint. After that, as Fletcher just stares on, sort of dumbfounded, thinking, really? We're just going to keep going after him? Granny Sarah, the toothless old hillbilly grandma, played by Paula Truman, lets out this cackle that makes my blood go cold the way she does it. Like, she just realizes the absurdity of the situation. She's like, oh, okay, you're going down to Texas, huh, to kill some more? Here's how it sounded if you are not familiar with the movie. All right, that's the cackle right there. I pick it up right here where he asked the question.
First, and we'll get the others.
Glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage. Hear the grapes.
We've got him now. We'll get these two first, and we'll get the others.
What others? Weirds and the kid are the last ones.
I know. Texas is full of rebels. Lots of work to do down in Texas.
We get Josie Wales and it ends.
Doing right ain't got no end.
Wow. According to Grok, the line is often seen as a critique of endless wars, crusades, government overreach. Terrell embodies the idea that the war is over, but the hunt never ends for those in power. Clint Eastwood has described the movie as having anti-war themes with parallels to modern conflicts that drag on without resolution. Well, I say this movie and this scene applies so perfectly to VAR in soccer and replay in general that it's almost like the movie was written to one day predict. Well, you know, if you start going to look at every little thing, you're not going to have sports anymore. It's fucking crazy. So there's three specific incidents that have to be addressed when it comes to VAR. And before I get to the three VAR, I'm still stunned that this guy for Norway, Sørloth, I believe, somehow refused to pass the ball to a wide open Erling Haaland for what would have been an easy one-on-one with the keeper goal. Almost certainly. Maybe he would have missed. Maybe the keeper would have made a spectacular save. But it was a two-on-one fast break in the open field. And Sørloth just choked. He didn't even pass it. He's like, what do I do? You could see Haaland just putting his arms out like, bro, pass it to me, will you? Of course, Haaland was subbed out in extra time in the brutal heat down in Miami. Why was the game in Miami, you might ask? Outdoors, when we have so many wonderful northern climate stadiums that could have been used and or indoor stadiums that could have been used? Why do you think? Take one wild guess. Money. The city's bid to host the World Cup to FIFA. Bid. And FIFA then look at all the bids, which I'm sure had clause after clause after clause that said, at no cost to FIFA, at no cost to FIFA, this and this and this, at no cost to FIFA. And then they picked which ones. Now, Miami is arguably our best soccer market, although Seattle would beg to differ. Kansas City is very strong, and that's why they also hosted games and matches. But Miami should have been ruled out right away to say, well, yeah, Miami, we love you. We love the fact that Messi plays in our pro league down there. But yeah, we know what the weather is in Miami. Outdoors in fucking July. How about no? Haaland got subbed out. His coach said he was spent at that point. Maybe he was injured. Who knows? But that play alone probably cost Norway. As well as the first goal that was overturned, or the goal that was overturned for Norway because Haaland was determined to have pushed off an English player. I believe it was Gordon for England. He's the fast as fuck white kid with the moppy hair. Here's the problem with that. Did he push off? Yeah. Yeah, he did. But what happens is when you start examining all the stuff that goes on, and by the way, as Gordon's going down, his hand is going up. Like, hey, look at me, I'm getting pushed. He very craftily made sure to engage and to bump up and rub up against Haaland as guys are jockeying all the time in these corner kick situations. And then knowing that Haaland would likely at least push off to some degree or do something to separate from him, he was going to flop. And the flopping would have had a chance to draw an immediate whistle, which it did not, because there was chaos in there. But at worst case, hey, if they score on this, they may look, Well, they're going to look because they look at everything now because doing good ain't got no end. It's so dumb, by the way, that soccer, which has so few exciting moments, 2, 3, 4, if you're lucky in a game, exultant, jubilant, communal moments of yes. Every goal is a huge celebration for not just the team, but the fans in the stadium and entire nations. And to think that they would willingly in soccer say, you know what, we're going to review every goal to make sure there's nothing weird or wrong going on. That's crazy because they're turning over otherwise unremarkable and completely fair goals based on, well, I don't know, it looked like he pushed him there. So the flopping is both essential. There's flopping and there's faking. I would say that Gordon flopped against Hollande in that he exaggerated the force to knock him down while putting his hand up to go, hey, I was pushed down, because he kind of got up almost right away as the ball was then coming into the mixer and before the goal was scored. So it's clear that he was able to at least recover, but he wanted to make sure to let everyone know because he figured, hey, on VAR, they may see this and they may take the goal away if there is a goal. If the ball gets booted out of the box, then guess what? It was no cost to anybody. I flopped as insurance against a goal, and the insurance paid off. Of course, that was one play that infuriated Norway, and rightfully so. Another play that infuriated Norway was the ball on an England kick clearly, or on a Norway clearing kick, appeared to, and I want to say that carefully, appeared to clearly hit one of the spider cam wires. Now, when I say appeared to, it's because I can't say with 1,000% conclusion, yes, it definitely hit one of the wires. And I should note that I had erroneously said to my friend Nick Lochner of the Clean Sheet EPL that they don't use the spider cams because they'd be too risky because the ball can go up really, really high at any time. You never know. Well, obviously they're using them, and obviously something happened. To me, it looked like the ball changed trajectory because why would three players and the coach all point at the sky as it happened? Why did the ball come down in a way in which the, I believe, England's guy saw it deflect? He got on it right away. Norway's guy was expecting it to go further and didn't really react. So by his reaction, it kind of implied that it hit something. But then after the match, FIFA claimed, and that led to a goal by England. Sweet goal. One of the two by Jude Bellingham. Hey, Jude. I know. They probably used that headline in all the tabloids. Anyway, afterwards, FIFA said, well, the internal sensor for the ball showed no irregularity in the ball's heartbeat. So therefore, it could not have hit any wires above the field. Oh, really? And yet it can detect a tick of a strand of hair in an earlier match that screwed, oh, who was it that got screwed on the Croatia? Get the fuck out of here. To think that you are sitting there as a soccer fan going, I can't believe we're debating this. Every goal may not be a goal because they've got to look at it first to try to microscope any infractions. And then we've got a microchip in the ball that is supposedly synced up with the video of the match itself so they can say definitively if it was touched by somebody or not. But nobody fucking believes it because we've had two things now where you go, no way. No way. I don't believe it. They won't release the internal data, the raw data from it. It's fucking crazy. So there was that. So those are the two things in that game. The third thing from that game, the England-Norway game, was late in the match, Norway's fighting to get back in it, down 2-1, and they have a sequence where there's a shot on goal, and Pickford, England's goalie, comes zooming out of the goal mouth to leap up and punch the ball away. And in the process of doing so, collides wildly with his own player. And he crashes to the ground and, of course, pretends like he's about to die because that's what soccer players have to do to sell these calls. And the referee blows the whistle when there was a real scramble at that point and Norway almost had possession and was ready to go back on the counterattack. following the collision. It's crazy to me that you can pretend to be injured and they'll stop the game in soccer. Now, the one thing that they do now, and I had to call Nick on this during one of the timeouts, I called him after regulation, I believe, to ask about this. I didn't feel like the American announcers in that England game explained well enough when they said that Norway would have to play with 10 guys because somebody was injured and then they had to bring out the trainer and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, okay, how long do they have to play with 10 guys? They didn't explain it very well. Nick explained it to me that there is a certain number of minutes, like at least a minute, they have to be off the pitch before they're allowed back in, and there's another FIFA referee who's not the match referee who's administering the, okay, well, you said you were hurt, and we brought a physio out, but I don't know, it doesn't look like you're hurt. Okay, you got to sit out a minute, now you can go back in. What they should do, this is where you soccer fans are going to go, oh, great, got to listen to Zabe tell me what they should do for the world's most popular sport. What they should do is they should say, look, if we have to stop the game for you, if you literally are that hurt, you're leaving the game. You're out. You're done. That would fix things in a hurry. Because if you truly are kind of shaken up and you're on the ground for 30 seconds, then the penalty to your team is, okay, you're down a man for 30 seconds. You'll live. And then the guy can get up, shake it off, and go from there. But if you literally can't get up, and if you can't go sub yourself out, if you're so hurt, you're like, oh, shit, I broke my leg, then you should be out of the game. I mean, it's just that simple. Why don't they make that change? I don't know. At least they've made some moves to mitigate against what they call the dark arts, the fakery, the dark arts, the delay tactics, the dark arts. It's bullshit. But soccer fans put up with it, and I guess they're putting up with VAR. I don't know how real soccer fans feel about VAR. Does it technically get some things right? Yeah. But the technically right, to me, doesn't really feel good. That brings us to the calamity that occurred between Argentina and Switzerland. First up, shout out to Switzerland, who outplayed all expectations in this World Cup and arguably should have gone through against mighty Argentina. They also have a lot of Nigerians that have probably never shoveled snow in Switzerland, who probably don't know how to fucking yodel, but that's okay. That's international soccer for you. One of the Swiss players, who I think is from Nigeria, Breel Embolo, got caught up in a mistaken identity situation. Here is the call of the game, and then I'll pick it up after this.
There's some reverberations around planet football, that goal. Ezequiel Palacios, the midfield player with over 40 caps to his name.
Well, what's happened is the referee has cautioned the Argentinian player for a foul challenge, and what he believes is, the VAR believes that there was no contact, and therefore the yellow card is unjust. And actually the Swiss player is diving. So what the referee can do in his power, which we saw in a previous game with the United States, he can reverse the yellow card and give it to the Swiss player. The problem with this then is the Swiss player is already on a yellow card from the first half. And that wouldn't, for me, this would be very harsh to give a second yellow card for a simulation.
After review, there is no foul for number 5. And number 7, there is a clear simulation. Final decision, yellow card to number 7.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And in that instance, all hell is going to break loose here. Switzerland are absolutely furious at that turn of events.
Mistaken identity. Now, technically, it was the right call. And you should say, well, then what are you complaining about, Zabe? Well, I'm complaining about the fact that getting it right is overrated. Getting it right is not the most important thing. Yes, you want to take simulation or fakery out of the game. One way to do that is to give a yellow card. And it's Embolo's fault for getting a yellow card earlier in the match. What he did was he kind of anticipated contact, started to go down, and then kicked his leg out to make sure there was contact with the Argentinian player on his way to the ground. It was very artful. I would imagine that SGA would be envious of that move. And by the way, this is where the NBA players get it, from soccer. But the fix for this is worse than the original disease, because soccer's card system, it is this sophisticated and very well thought out system that is designed to ensure fair play and to cut down on violent injuries. Oh, wait a minute, I'm just kidding. It's not sophisticated, and it is not well thought out. It's just traditional. Yellow card means, hey, hey, easy, chief. This is soccer here, okay? You can't be cutting guys out at the leg. Someone's going to get hurt. And if somebody gets really out of control, red card, he's out of the game. Been that way forever. But they should absolutely modify it so there's not such severe penalties. But the fact that VAR looks at this stuff and they examine all this stuff and they overturn goals, it reeks of, well, if somebody wanted to, they could just decide how matches are going to go. And even though in these cases, except for the ball hitting a wire, which I think was clear and they decided, well, no, it didn't. Even though they seemingly got the calls kind of correct, mostly correct, or correct technically, who wants to watch this? Wouldn't you rather watch a soccer game in which the goals are scored, the fans go crazy, and as long as there's not an egregious foul or an egregious offside that is apparent to the naked eye, just let the goal stand? We are still playing these games for fun. Oh, by the way. Your thoughts on the VAR situation? It's crazy. It's nuts. I couldn't be a soccer fan under these premises. I just couldn't. I'll still watch the rest of the World Cup. And it is a banger Final Four. The top four seeds, the four biggest stars, Mbappe, Messi, Kane, as well as Yamin Lamal. They're all in there. Top four seeds. Sharp-looking Final Four. Iconic powerhouse nations and teams. I'm here for it. I'll watch it. But man, it is number one bullshit. Speaking of funsies, the Home Run Derby is Monday night. It'll be on Netflix, oh, by the way. Netflix has bought the Home Run Derby, first time in, like, well, forever almost, that it will not be on ESPN. And yes, you'll have to have a subscription to Netflix. I don't have one of those. Well, then you're not going to watch the game. You're not going to watch the Home Run Derby. There'll be highlights, though. No ESPN, no Fox, no linear TV. 8 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, Citizens Bank. There'll be quite a few people announcing it. Matt Vasgersian, play-by-play. Barry Bonds will be on the coverage. That'll be interesting. Don't think they'll talk about his steroid use, do you? CC Sabathia, Hunter Pence, Anthony Rizzo. L. Duncan will be the studio host. Lauren Shahadi, on-field reporter. It's quite the mix of people, and they're adding Michael Irvin. I hope Michael Irvin is tuned up in whatever way he feels appropriate. Don't drug test him. Just let him do whatever he wants. Fine. For the coverage on Netflix. Hey, maybe your girl will be scrolling through Netflix looking for some, you know, summertime, just mindless viewing, and she'll tune into it. I don't know. Maybe. And then, of course, the Home Run Derby leads into the All-Star Game itself on Tuesday, which will just be for fun because they tried awarding home field advantage, and they did it for 14 years, by the way. They did it starting in 2003. That was following the disastrous tie in Milwaukee, the 7-7 tie, on which they ran out of pitchers, and they said, we got to do something. So they did. The American League won the Midsummer Classic in the This Time It Counts era, 11 of the 14 games, and then with a new collective bargaining deal in 2016 that's about to end, they just said, no, we're not doing this. And it's awarded to the team with the best regular season record. Now, prior to that, it was alternated between the AL and the NL. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Baseball has one of the lowest home field advantages, though, despite the home team getting to bat last when it comes to professional sports. So it'll be for fun. We're here for it. Wednesday, we react. Thursday, Boo Ben Canop Day. And I can't wait. Coming up, Andy Poland joins me. We'll talk to Uncle Andy, see how his weekend was, get his thoughts on a variety of issues. You are listening to the Zabecast. Let's talk casino for a second. MyBookie.ag has a full Las Vegas-style casino right on your phone. Blackjack, roulette, craps, slots, video poker, all of it. No flight, no parking, no guy next to you who hasn't showered since Thursday. And they have live dealer games. Real humans on camera dealing cards and spinning wheels in real time. You can watch the shuffle. It's not some random number generator. It's an actual person running an actual table, and you're sitting at it from your couch. New players get $25 in casino credit automatically with promo code ZABE, just for making a deposit. Free money to try it on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. All right, I got some good news for you, Andy. I already went through in great detail all the VAR snafus in the World Cup, so you don't have to go through them. But I just would love to know, how much of the matches did you watch on Friday and then on Saturday?
Zero. I'm done. I'll see you in 4 years.
That's
watch
it.
The final.
Andy's out. You'll watch the final. Okay, fine. But you're out for now.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. What did you do on Saturday night? What'd you look at? The back of your eyelids?
Watch the Nats blow it again with the bullpen. I don't know, probably watched a movie.
That's fine. That's fine. So soccer didn't do it for you. Well, you'll be glad to know that I'm being vindicated on the evils of replay with every single match that goes on in the World Cup, because they use VAR in a way that would be insane if it was in American sports. They'll take a goal. And then they will look at it and make sure that everything is just perfect. And if something isn't, they'll take the goal off the board.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you imagine this in the NFL with the running clock and, you know, the time they take to review things? And then you think, oh, wait, we've successfully run out the clock.
Yeah.
We've done running plays. And, oh, no, stoppage time. You got another 6 minutes. Sorry.
Yeah. So I watched the end of the Nats game Friday night. And boy, did they shit. The bullpen shit the bed again. The bullpen's ERA in the ninth inning is north of eight.
I think the number is 28 blown saves before the All-Star game.
Yeah.
I mean, if just half of those and they're a contender.
That's unreal. Now, look, they're ahead of schedule. James Wood continues to be this incredible story. He is not one of the guys they're talking about trading, but should they, if they turbocharge the rebuild?
They got like 5 years of control left with him. So, but he's a Boris client. He's going to free agency. It doesn't matter what they offer him or how they try to extend him. He's going to go to free agency unless they do what they did with Juan Soto and trade him with 2 or 3 years of control left.
Now, with the control, now that does make him more attractive. There are other pieces they could move. At this point, as we're going to be through the All-Star game this week, and then the trade deadline comes up pretty quick at the end of the month, are you in sell mode with your Nationals?
I think the weekend sweep kind of cemented that. I don't think... And it's not like they can go to the bullpen store and find Mariano Rivera.
Right.
He's not walking through that door.
Right.
So more likely they are going to be sellers at the deadline. The one that concerns me is C.J. Abrams. Another guy with control. He's going to be an all-star. He's starting to shortstop. You know, do they deal him like they did Soto?
I mean, at some point, you got to deal a guy that can get you the most return. And I would say that Abrams is one of the guys
that
get you a lot.
Yeah.
So,
right. I mean, in retrospect, the Soto trade was good.
They got
two all-stars out of it.
Yeah. Yes, they did. Yeah. And they might have to trade some of those all-stars in a perpetual, get rid of them. So I did mention before you came on, the home run derby is on Netflix this year. Are you aware of that?
I know. Yeah.
How do you feel about
Michael Irvin's going to be involved?
I know. How do you feel about that, old man Andy? Do you have a Netflix subscription?
I do have Netflix. I will probably watch some of it, but after a while, it just isn't interesting.
Back.
They got rid of him, but yeah, I mean, how much can you do with it? Every year there's some new series of rules.
I jokingly said that the rules are different for the 47th year in a row. I didn't actually research that. I don't know how many years it's officially been an All-Star Break event. I'm guessing it's at least 47. It seems like in my lifetime I remember.
No. I don't think so. I think it's 40 or less.
Okay.
47 would take you back to what year? 79?
Yeah, look it up right now. Around. How many years old is the All-Star Home Run Derby? By the way, you said you have a Netflix account. Is it yours or is it Jeremy's?
It's Jeremy's, but he pays for me to be an extra. Oh, it's not like you can't just use somebody else's password anymore. They don't allow that.
Oh, okay. So you're his plus one. He pays you? You should pay him, Andy. I know he's...
No. He does it for free. I keep him on the four-person cell phone account that I have for...
Oh, you pay for your Netflix, and you let Jeremy freeload off of you.
No, he pays for Netflix, and I pay for the four phones that he has. One, he has one.
Oh, okay.
Arlene has one.
Okay.
Samantha has one. Okay. I have one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. All-Star Home Run Derby is 41 years old. So you're right, not 47. Mm. Began in 1985, held at the Metrodome in Minneapolis, won by Dave Parker. So
there's some great stories about that, including back in the day, they would just have a bunch of kids running around shagging the home runs that didn't make it. And there was some kid out there who I almost took one from over the wall, you know, the walls at the Minneapolis Metrodome, they were soft.
They're remember baggies. That?
The big baggie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I forget who it was, but yeah, he almost took it away.
Okay. So here's my question to you, because you're like, there's only so much you can do. I'm not that excited. Is that a function of you being 68, me being 58? And I'm going to watch, and I have Netflix. Like, I've got every damn streaming service up the wazoo. Is it because we're getting old, or is the concept and format of it old? I'll hang up and listen to your answer off the air.
I just don't know how much more you can do with it. The All-Star weekend or a couple of days in Baltimore '93, which was the last one that I attended.
Yeah.
The Home Run Derby was in the afternoon, and it was taped to be run later in the day. And to this day, it's one of the big highlights because Ken Griffey Jr. hit the warehouse. And I remember the following day walking along Utah Street right behind the right field wall. And there were about seven or eight people selling the alleged ball that hit the warehouse.
Seven or eight guys, shockingly, right? Yeah, hey, who wants the home run ball that Ken Griffey hit the warehouse with?
There's a plaque up, too, for it.
Did he hit the warehouse or did he just hit Utah Street?
No, he hit the warehouse.
I thought there was plaques on Utah Street. And by the way, it's spelled EUTAW. It's not UTAH.
Right.
Great fucking ballpark. That was the first of the retro ballparks, Camden Yards, and they nailed it. It still holds up to today.
And here's how much hatred there's been for Peter Angelos. That was 33 years ago, second year of the ballpark. They haven't had an All-Star game there since.
Yeah.
And it's because they hated Angelos.
Okay, but let me back up, Andy. Is it that we're old or is the concept old? Surely there's got to be some kids excited for this thing tonight.
I suppose. I remember the first year they had it in prime time was like 98, I think. And there was some excitement for that. The 99 one was really cool because it was at Fenway Park And remember, they brought Ted Williams out on a golf cart. That's before they froze his head. And all the home run hitters were gathered around him, you know, and asking for advice. That was a really cool moment.
Yeah, but by and large, they're dull.
They're dull after a while.
Yeah, I know. See, you know, now I wish we had cherished Berman in the home run derby. I used to rip Berman as being a carnival barker. I would kill
him. Really want him back?
Yes, I want everything back. I want to turn back time. I want to go back in time. I want sports to be the way it once was circa 1998, which was when I think sports peaked. And that's a whole nother podcast topic for later in the doldrums of summer. What was the peak of sports? 98
That's interesting because to me, it's related to age. The sports sweet spot for me was like ages 13 to 15. Those it mattered to me.
I agree. But the reason I choose 98 was cable was widespread. Right. Satellite was available over the top. I believe DirecTV launched in 94. So satellite was available to fill in the gaps. Sports Center reigned supreme. Sports Illustrated was still very healthy. There was only one debate show on ESPN that was Sunday mornings, the sports reporters, and it was full of exceedingly mild takes because the journalists that were on the show weren't fucking buffoons. And so they were going to give their honest opinions, the only opinion that appeared on ESPN at any part of any day and any hour, by the way.
True. That's true. Right. And that's fact. Yeah.
And yet cable was prominent. High definition had not yet really become a thing. It was barely.
Oh, no.
HD was 01, 02, I want to say, because I had it at my old home and brought you guys out there to watch the Super Bowl.
You were really early.
Or a bleeding edge adopter, yeah.
Yeah, I actually saw, I probably told you this, I actually saw HD TV in 1989. It was the last Sugar Ray Leonard Roberto Duran fight. And they were showing off this new technology at the Javits Center. And I was working for UPI, and I got invited to that. And that's the first time I saw HDTV. The first time I saw it in a home was in your home at the Super Bowl 2003, I want to say. And you had to have a separate broadcast because the regular one, whatever network it was on, didn't work. I think Kevin Harlan did it with somebody. And we wound up watching like part of the game. But the graphics weren't as good.
Correct. It used a separate announce crew and graphics package, more limited replay camera angles as well.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And the box that I had to have to catch and decode the high-definition digital signal, $1,000 for the box. And I paid it like a fucking idiot.
Then I remember being invited to your house. Jeremy and I came over. And by that time, you had the 3 TV set up there.
Yes.
And you know, HD was in full swing. Even I had HD by then. But seeing an NFL Sunday in that room was awe-inspiring. That was incredible.
It was pretty, pretty good. So
100 inches.
Yeah. Update, Ted Williams is still cryopreserved at the Alcor Life Extension Foundation in Scottsdale, Arizona. How funny is it that they chose one of the hottest fucking places in the country to start a cryogenics lab? He died in 2002 at 83, and he is being stored, and his head is being stored separately from the body in liquid nitrogen around minus 196 degrees Celsius. 24 years later, he remains one of Alcor's patients with no reported changes or revivals. Oh, you think?
Well, his son sold the body, and like the body got separated from the head somehow.
Yes, it says the process was controversial due to family disputes. His will originally called for cremation and allegations of mishandling, which Alcor denied. He has stayed there since. So,
and the son died some years later of leukemia or something like that. Yeah. So it was a terrible story. Awful.
Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Junior Caminero, Jack Caglianoni of the Royals, Wilson Contreras, Munetaka Murakami of the White Sox, Ben Rice of the Yankees, and Jordan Walker of the Cardinals are your home run derby participants.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, when Harper won in Washington in 2008, that was, or 2018, that was cool. Yeah. That was a cool moment.
So, yeah. Look, maybe the event, I need to hear from some youngins listening right now, is the event still cool to you if you're in your 30s or your kids who may just be, you know, teenagers or even younger that love baseball? Because it still could be. It's quite possible Andy and I are just old. On the Bryce Harper front, I have an update that the video that had created quite a splash with the degenerate gambler for FanDuel, mm-hmm. that was $2 million in debt, and Bryce Harper sending him pick-me-up videos, hey, wishing you right. a happy Thanksgiving for you and your family. No, it's not happy. The fucking guy is gambling away the entire family fortune, you dipshit. Now the word is, according to their side, Harper's side, that was a cameo video that was lifted by somebody at FanDuel and repurposed without Bryce Harper's consent. That Harper had no idea he was sending a, hey, buddy, chin up kind of video. You're aware of this story, yeah. correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has a terrible look to it, but it also is, what is it, FanDuel? This
yeah.
one?
Or, yeah.
Yeah. That's a bad. And when you read about these gambling sites, it's the whales that make it happen.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who are betting, you know, $5, $10, they're not supporting it. They need this guy. They need him on that wall.
Oh, yeah.
So
when you got a monster like that, when you got a lot of monster like that, you reel him in. That was the line that I used to always play, the soundbite I used to always play from the HBO Real Sports with Jim Lampley back in the day. Remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I worked with Jim Lampley.
So, okay. WFN. Yeah, so maybe that's indeed what happened, that Harper had no idea, even though in the video – Harper references, hey, your FanDuel rep, and I forget the gal's name, wanted me to send you this video. Maybe the FanDuel rep lied to Harper saying, oh, you know what? This guy, we're doing this. We're paying for the cameo for him. So go ahead and give him a nice Thanksgiving welcome or whatever. Maybe that's the case. But here's the larger point. Why the fuck is Bryce Harper doing cameos? I think they cost $900 for a cameo.
Yeah. Well, it's a cameo. It takes him, what, 3 minutes? And he collects $900? You can never have too much money.
But he has too much money.
I understand, but
actually has too much money. How come you and I aren't doing cameos? How come we're not bending down to reach our arm into the sewer?
I'm on their account list.
You are?
Nobody's interested. Yeah.
How many have you done?
None. Nobody's interested. And I don't blame them. What?
I'm going to buy one from you. You've signed up for Cameo, hoping somebody to go, hey, Andy.
I mean, it's been a few years, but check it. I don't even have to check the account. But no, I mean, people have said I should do it.
And I said, you know, I don't think that's a significant revenue stream for me. And as easy as it may be, it's a shiny nickel that is down a sewer grate that I don't want to get my arm all the way down there and get it all dirty trying to reach for that nickel. I don't need the nickel that much.
Okay, but there are some people who are such fans of yours that they would really be happy if they got a greeting from you.
I'm sure there's 13 people over under. Well, 13 people.
That's 13 more than most have.
And if I charge $100 per, that's $1,300. That's a new Sony A6700. With the
you already know what you want to buy with
the stacked Bion sensor and the HD frame rates up to 240 frames per second. Not that I'm shopping, but I am shopping. Always got to be shopping.
See, that would just go in my checking account
to not be spent because Andy has limited passions and expenditures in life, and that's a beautiful thing. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's like the line in Working Girl. After she got fired, they pooled together their money and they gave her a couple $100 and they said, don't spend it on the Con Ed bill.
All right. Did you see the Kathy Engelbert interview kerfuffle with Dan Patrick at the celebrity golf tournament in Tahoe?
I if you check my Twitter account, I'm knee deep in with a bunch of people on this because some guy named I think it's Jason Page who has some kind of a show in Vegas.
Yeah.
Put that out, the clip that Dan Patrick has from his show explaining what happened. And he says, oh, Dan just thinks that she needs to come on his show, and that's all he wants. And then I ripped him, and people have been ripping back. I mean, this guy.
So you're going at him. Okay, let me play a little snippet here of Dan Patrick's explanation, and there is something even funnier that happened as he was trying to get Kathy Engelbert on the show.
Here interview with Kathy Engelbert. She's the WNBA commissioner. Todd spoke to her a couple of nights ago, and we had a pairings party. Todd went up to her. She's been very friendly to the show. Last year at this event was friendly to us. And Todd said, hey, we'd love to have you on. There's a lot of questions. People have not heard answers from the commissioner. And she said yes. So yesterday after the show, we waited almost 2 hours for her. This was scheduled. She was going to do a meeting in her hotel room, a conference call, and then she was going to join us. So Fritzy, for at least 90 minutes, is looking just for an update. We're trying to figure, we're standing by, we're waiting to interview her. They didn't, balk at anything, didn't say you can't ask anything. And we thought, okay, we're going to be able to finally ask questions about Caitlin Clark, the WNBA expansion, a lot of different things. And we waited and we waited and we waited. And then we got word, Todd did, that the commissioner said that the WNBA staff, the PR staff, said that she is not allowed to do this. They would prefer that she did not do this. You're the commissioner, and you're listening to the PR department, which is fine, but did you check with PR before you said yes to us? We promoted it all day yesterday. Now,
okay, so I'll stop it right there. First things first. Dan has the best voice ever. Just tonally wonderful, mellifluent, deep, rich, very good. And look at the set. This is the coolest of cool kids' tables in the sports media cafeteria. They're right there on the fucking range at this place. Look at that set, Andy.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous.
I watch a lot of his interviews on YouTube, and he walked out the door at ESPN with basically management telling him, you'll never work in this business again. And he built something that's very, very impressive with some former ESPN employees, including Todd Fritz and Paul Papp.
Sure.
I worked with both of them. And he's got, Dan Patrick is the best sports interviewer, bar none. There's nobody even close to him.
Better than Roy Firestone?
He knows how to do an interview. Well, Roy hadn't done interviews in years, and he's better than Roy ever was.
So he's the best. Whoa, don't you blaspheme Roy here. Roy and I went to synagogue together, Andy. Don't you do that.
That's funny. Roy was considered a good interviewer because he was the only one doing them.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
So, okay. So here's the thing. Good for Dan Patrick trying to get her on, Kathy Engelbert.
Yeah.
But imagine waiting 2 fucking hours and then being told, yeah, no, the PR staff says I can't do it. You're the commissioner. Yeah. This is the most unserious fucking league with the most clown shoe administration and people involved in it that is laughable on every day of the week, including Sundays and holidays. They are not a serious league. This is an agenda-driven league that plays a little basketball on the side.
Wow. Well, this is a league that limped along for years. It was supported by the NBA. And then all of a sudden, like a lightning bolt, here comes Caitlin Clark. Okay. So she's got the magic beans. And all you have to do is treat her nicely. And then you have a league. And everybody makes more money. And it's like when Bird and Magic entered the NBA. Everybody made more money. When Tiger Woods came on the scene in golf, everybody made more money. No. They treat her like crap.
Yeah.
The commissioner is wishy-washy and foolish. This is another example of what she was on 60 Minutes a year or so ago. Oh, yeah, Caitlin Clark is one of the good players we have in league. No. That's your league. Look at the numbers when she plays and when she doesn't play. That's who you sell. David Stern understood that. The league is Magic and Bird.
But you know why she can't say that, right?
Well, I guess because it'll piss off some of the players who are most, many of them are black and lesbian. Okay. Well, that's too bad. It, your job is to grow the league.
Well,
and you have,
she is being kept. She is being kept at bay by the social justice wing of the league, which really isn't even a wing. It's 90% of the league. It's a agenda-driven league that, like I said, they dabble in basketball. They lose money hand over fist. They've never made money. This new CBA guarantees they'll continue losing money because they gave them an insane raise. But the NBA owners don't care, and they're getting a bunch of suckers to buy these franchises. And I'm thinking this is the greatest pyramid scheme ever, that someday when the league decides to pull the money out from underneath it, it'll collapse like a house of cards. But for now, it's like, hey, the value of the Las Vegas Aces keeps rising. They're not making money.
It's a loss leader, and it brings in more female fans. There's some advantages to it.
I'm not saying there's not advantages. I'm saying at some point the music will stop, and then what happens? Well, we'll see.
It will stop if they continue to treat Caitlin Clark like this, and if they have an incompetent commissioner like this. She's the worst. And then, did you see at the end of this, while he's talking about her, he's chipping golf balls out of the bunker.
Not just chipping. She actually shanked one. Badly out of the... What do you mean, whatever?
The point is, he's talking about her, and she's 50 feet away chipping golf balls. Ridiculous.
Here. By the way, when you say whatever, Andy, you're missing the point. This is your non-golfer coming out in you. It matters because if you're working on your bunker game and you suck in the bunkers and are hitting shanks, that's another insult to an already laughable thing to say as the commissioner. Yeah, I'd love to do it, but the PR people say I can't.
She's hitting practice shots out of the bunker. So that's what's disappointing. We deserve more respect than what she gave us yesterday.
Here's the B-roll.
We want to cover the WNBA.
Ready?
The PR staff, somebody
did
a disservice.
Better than I could do.
Yeah, what a job. Well, somebody likes her, Andy. Otherwise, they would have gotten rid of her, right?
Well, I don't know. I think there was a window where Adam Silver could have extended her and chose not to. So she'll be gone at the end of the year, and this will be cited as one of the reasons she failed miserably.
All right. Lastly, I'm assuming you didn't stay up to watch Conor McGregor's return to the octagon, UFC 329, 37 years old against 34-year-old Max Holloway. You did not stay up for this, I assume. Okay.
I did not.
Okay. You were not all excited like, oh, man, Conor McGregor's coming back.
No, but I noticed that ESPN was hyping the crap out of it.
Of course they were.
Typical of what they do.
Did you watch the highlights?
I saw something about Conor McGregor checking out and everybody's angry.
Yeah. Here's the match. I'll play it for you because of the – here's the fight, I should say, not the match. Here's the fight. I'll play it because it only takes a minute and 39 seconds.
We highlight Holloway's weight, of course, because he is making his UFC welterweight debut. Five all-important inches in reach reside with Conor McGregor. McGregor back to the proving ground. McGregor trying to get off to a fast start as it brings.
He's falling. Conor fell twice trying to throw those kicks.
So he comes right out, throws a wild jumping kick, lands awkwardly, may have hurt his knee at that point, tries to do it again, also lands weird, starts falling down. Holloway is kind of stopping with the referee to go, are you sure this guy's not done? Like, are you sure he's okay? Watch this.
Holloway's looking at the referee because he feels as though McGregor maybe is injured. Mike Beltran says, keep working. Oh, man.
This is an older brother beating up his kid brother, is what this is. This is not competitive. And McGregor allegedly made $15 million guaranteed. He claims that he came into the match, came into the ring, and came into the fight sharp and ready to go. Even though he's been out of the octagon for 5 years, he said, talk of me being off while walking into the fight is nonsense. It is being billed and talked about as yet another great fraud in the world of boxing slash MMA, which we've seen time and time again, right?
The boxing's decline is one of the great sports disappointments of my life. To this day, the greatest sporting event of my lifetime was Ali Frazier won. And what's happened to it is it basically because of pay-per-view, that there's no, you don't know who these fighters are. There's nobody. There's, I don't, who's the heavyweight champion of the world? Do we know? Do you know?
In boxing? Yeah. Which belt are we talking about?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, there's no heavyweight boxers that are known. There's no boxers, period, that are known. Used to know Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran.
Yeah, but my point is the fight game, whether it's boxing and now MMA, human cockfighting, it's full of fucking shady shit. And this was another one.
It always was shady.
I know.
The boxing always had shady characters, but it was the sweet science. This is the schoolyard, and it sucks.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get the UFC people angry at me. I would say that there is incredible skill sets in discipline for the three different basic areas of UFC, and there have been some great fighters, very skilled. This was not a great fight. This, I think many savvy UFC fans saw this one coming from a million miles away. Like, oh, McGregor's back, huh? 5 years later, I'm sure he's going to be really sharp. And, of course, he pretty much was washed and stole $15 million from suckers that decided to stay up late to watch it. Ajit Kabayel, the unbeaten German, is the WBC title holder. The WBA is held by Murat Gassiev. The IBF is vacant. The WBO is Daniel Dubois. And Ring Magazine has a belt. It's held by Alexander Usyk. So in other words, four guys you and I couldn't pick out of the Osmond family Christmas card.
Right. Wasn't it about 20 years ago that you bought Lennox Lewis and Tyson and you invited a bunch of people over? Right, but the point being is that doesn't exist anymore.
I know.
That was the thing that guys could do. Oh, Zay bought the fight. That's great. We're going to go over there. We're going to drink some beers. We're going to have a good time, play some ping pong, watch the fight.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
I'd like to have those days back as well. When you say, well, what do you want to do? Bring the old... Yeah, I want to bring it all back, Andy. 98.
That'd be great.
98 was peak sports, but we can debate that another time. All right. What do you got plans for on this Monday, Tuesday of the All-Star break?
Taking a staycation this week. So I'm going to get some things done around the house, ride my bike. Cool. Like that. Yeah.
All right. Do you need any help lifting furniture or moving stuff, doing some light yard work? Because I could help. I'm mostly unemployed. I've got a one-hour show now back in Milwaukee. I'm happy about it, excited about it. My old buddy Josh Albrecht is there with me, but still very light work. I'm used to being a plow horse. I used to do 3 a.m, 3 p.m. with you.
I remember that. Yep, those were the days. But you said it was killing you, so
it was.
You're still getting JFK fill-in, right?
Yeah, still do that as well. So, all right. Okay. Well, you call me if you need any help. And if I'm not napping, I will consider getting up and driving an hour to go to your house, okay? All right,
back
Andy.
Back to lunch.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Jay. Take care.
Let me end on 3 P's today. Little politics, pop culture, and personal. 3 P's. I think I'm going to end the pod on 3 P's every day, if you don't mind. Just a shot of politics, a shot of pop culture, and then something personal. I know people have said, I like when you talk politics. You do it in a way that is not trying to change anyone's mind, per se, but you're calling balls and strikes. You have a good sense for it. I'm going to tell you, there's a reason why I don't talk politics. Lindsey Graham died suddenly over the weekend. He had just been in Ukraine at a drone factory, supposedly super secret drone factory that, the Russians bombed into dust literally 24 hours later. Lindsey Graham had already left, according to reports, and he apparently died after a, quote, brief illness in his home in Washington, D.C. Heart attack. But an illness as well. He was 71, I believe. This is interesting because, you know, Lindsey Graham was never one of the guys that I could really stomach much on Team Elephant. Doesn't mean it wasn't useful, though. At times, you'd be like, okay, thank God somebody's got some balls, and I guess it's Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham was the guy that stood up the loudest when the Brett Kavanaugh shit was going off the rails, and the screaming harpies and the insane lunatics who were making stories up about Kavanaugh had to be put down, and Graham was strong in that regard. So it's not that he wasn't at least useful at times, but way too much of a warmonger for me, even though he's a former Air Force colonel. And so it's like, you know, he also has some military credentials, but man, there was not a war he didn't want us to get in. And he loved the fact that he was going to Ukraine to show off, hey man, we're helping the Ukrainians buy more drones. So I wasn't a fan of that. Obviously, South Carolina is quite red, but it's never more than a couple cycles away from flipping, and I'm sure Democrats would love to flip it. The special election for his seat is going to be interesting because the timeline to do a special election, which heads into an election year this fall because his seat was actually up this year, is going to be interesting. The federal limits are different than the local limits, and they may conflict. I'm sure they'll sort it out. But Lindsey Graham had been in the seat for 23 years and 6 months, which was one of the longer runs currently for a senator, but certainly wasn't the longest of all time. He jumped into the seat when Strom Thurmond finally died. Strom Thurmond was in that seat for 47 years and 6 months. So in other words, two men have sat in that seat for fucking 70 years. This also coincides with Mitch McConnell disappearing last week. They're like, where's Mitch? And they're like, Mitch is not here. Yeah, where is he? His Chinese-born wife fled to China as soon as he apparently fell and was sick, and nobody knew if he was alive or not. Just fucking insane, by the way. Like, what hope do we have as a country when we can't even tell if our octogenarian senators are alive or dead, and nobody will say. And there's no way for us in the public to force our publicly elected officials to be straight with us and go, well, you know, he is serving to help run the country. We kind of would like to know, is he alive? Is he dead? Where the fuck is he? Well, the word came out that he's alive and that he is recovering. He's 84, by the way. He fell. That's what 84-year-olds do, unfortunately. I worry all the time about my mom, and my mom is pretty good walking around at her own pace at 85. And whenever I'm around her, I'm always right next to her. I can do this, Stephen. I'm fine. I'm like, Mom, rather be next to you in case you stumble than go to the hospital. Because gravity, it's undefeated. And unfortunately, gravity stalks people who are 84 years old and older. It just sits there waiting for its chance to fucking gravity. So Mitch McConnell, 84 years old, fell at home. He was hospitalized initially with reports of him being found unconscious. He's been recovering. Doctors have ruled out broken bones, concussion, heart attack, stroke, tumors, or hemorrhages. He was also treated for pneumonia. Okay. So you're telling me he fell and didn't break anything? Right. Okay. But he does have pneumonia. Okay. So McConnell says he's recovering. He's moved from hospital care to rehab and continues to progress and keeps working with the staff on Senate and Kentucky matters remotely. I mean, what a joke. Of course, so many of our elected politicians fucking die in office. Dianne Feinstein died in office at 90. 90. I remember they wheeled her old bag of bones in a wheelchair into Capitol Hill for a specific vote that they needed her vote for. And I just said, what? How can we have a society with this? Term limits, age limits, term limits, age limits, term limits, age limits. I want it. You probably want it. It's never happened. And they're never going to let it happen. They've gamed the system. But this is nuts. This shouldn't be happening. Two men shouldn't have one seat in a state for 70-plus years. And 84-year-olds and 90-year-olds shouldn't be falling at home and going unaccounted for a week or dying in office. Term limits, age limits. Someday, maybe. Although I'm going to keep my expectations low. On the pop culture front, you're going to see this video a lot if you haven't seen it already. Man tossed 8 feet in air in bison attack at Yellowstone Park. Oh my God. In terms of great video assets, few are as good as this one and terrifying as well. A tranquil evening stroll transformed into a battle for survival at Yellowstone National Park when a charging bull bison attacked a visitor, hurling him 8 feet through the air. It was caught on video by a professional photographer, and the old man was there with his grandson. And they were actually adhering to the park's recommendation to stay at least 100 feet away from all animals. Now, I've been out there to Yellowstone. It's spectacular. Yellowstone's in California? I went to the one in Wyoming. The other one. Why can't I think of it right now? Where Old Faithful is. National Park. You're screaming right now at the radio. I should know this. Yellowstone is in Wyoming. The one in California, National Park, California. I always mix these two up, by the way. Yosemite. Yeah, it's the two Y's. Yosemite, Yellowstone. I've been to Yellowstone. It's unbelievable. You should go. And I've seen the wild animals. Seen the moose. Seen the bison. I've kept my distance. I never felt really scared because I didn't get close to them. But even still, it's like, okay. I kind of, in my mind, always had a loose plan on evasive maneuvers if needed. And that's the thing. The need to pre-plan evasive maneuvers for a bison attack is very low in life, but it's never quite zero. So this grandpa, who looks like a quintessential Wyoming grandpa, suspenders, jeans, a long white beard, Methuselah long, he's there with his grandson. The bison had been acting erratically, had been charging other people, and had already taken over a little picnic table area where the family that was sitting there had to flee. It was menacing a nearby pickup truck, a white pickup truck that you see come through the picture. And there's grandpa with their son, and they stopped to see the bison kind of flopping around in the dirt, kind of strangely flopping around, very agitated, pissed off. He's having a bad day. And at one point, it decides, okay, I'm done flopping around. Guess what? Oh, there's two assholes. I'm going to go yeet one of them square up into the sky. And so charges the two. They duck into a small stand of pine trees. They're ducking in the pine trees. They're circling around. The only thing missing is Benny Hill music. Yakety Sax is the name of the song. And they're circling around, and the bison's in there, and the bison's just ramming against these small little pine trees, tearing them apart. The grandpa comes out. He's running around. He's trying to circle the trees. The kid, you don't see the kid anymore. You know where he is. He might have scurried up into a tree to climb away from the bison. But after a couple laps around the small stand of trees, grandpa ran out of luck. Because he ran out into the clear, the bison saw him, and then said, watch this. Fucking lifted his ass sky high. The screen cap is literally old Gramps, ass over teak kettle, 8 feet up, as the bison just gave him a womp. Now, what's crazy is that bison are not attack animals. They are grazers. They are herd animals. So even though they are formidable and can and will defend themselves and the giant horns and the size, and they're well aware of their size as well, just like elephants. Elephants are not attack animals, but they're well aware of what they can do and how they can fuck you up. And there are countless examples and legends and documented attacks of elephants that stomp humans to death because they understand I'm big, I weigh a lot, and your bones are squishy. Stomp, stomp, stomp. I guess bison have that same hardwiring deep in their operating system that when they're having a bad fucking day, they go into attack mode. But the grandpa's going to recover, probably better than Mitch McConnell. And if the family, assuming grandpa's fine, if the family doesn't take this screen cap I'm looking at right now, blow it up, make it into a poster, make it into art, and put it in the house, then what are we even doing here? Like, you got to do that. You got to lean into it. You got to be like, remember the time Grandpa got the business end of a bison? Fucking incredible. Lastly, on the personal front, I had the most wonderful text exchange during the matches of the World Cup on Saturday night. It was with my longtime former college roommate for a little bit, as well as my professional colleague at the student newspaper at UC Santa Barbara, the Daily Nexus, Scott Lawrence. Scott is a listener of this podcast. He listens to my other radio shows. He and I used to be as tight as can be. He lived in my parents' house with me when I was between kind of living in California. Scott's from California, but he'd moved out to DC for job opportunities. And he was like, hey, can I come stay at your parents' place? I was like, yeah, sure, buddy, let's go. And then I went back to California because I got a job out there, and he was left behind, and he stayed living in my parents' house. My parents let him stay there. It was kind of awkward, but it was cool. My parents were like, well, sure, why not? And Scott even dated one of my high school friends in my friend group, Kristen Carneal, sweet girl. And I was happy for him. But then, you know, we just sort of drifted apart. There was no big separation. So I haven't talked to Scott but once or twice in quite a while. Lives in Charlotte now, but listens to me. And I wear that with incredible humility and thankfulness that he finds my ramblings to be worthy of listening to, because we spent so many hours in the Daily Nexus offices beneath Stork Tower writing the student newspaper, the sports section, because Scott was the sports editor of the paper, and I worked under him, and we worked together on a whole bunch of stuff. We had some of the best fucking times ever in college. And our third guy as part of that, we kind of had a trio of guys that basically ran the sports department, is my actual roommate from many years ago, Aaron Heifetz. Aaron Heifetz, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, would go on. He played soccer in high school and junior college, and then began to coach at UCSB. He was an assistant to the coach at UCSB. And then went on after that to get a job with the U.S. Women's National Team as their press secretary. His most famous moment comes when Brandi Chastain scored that penalty kick and ripped off her shirt to show her sports bra and her ripped body. Who was one of the first guys running on the field? Aaron Heifetz, my college roommate. Really probably didn't belong out there, shouldn't have been there, but fuck it. He's like, I see my chance, I'm going for it. At the Coliseum in Los Angeles. Heifetz and I have never had any kind of falling out other than just he's been doing his thing, I've been doing mine, and I didn't think I even had his number. So I asked Lawrence, I'm like, do you have Heifetz's number? He gave it to me, and so I start three-way texting everybody on Saturday night about the World Cup. And I was embarrassed to have to ask my former college roommate, Heifetz, I'm like, so what are you doing these days? Because I had assumed he couldn't still be doing stuff for the women's national team. And guess what? He is. And he does help out on the men's side as well. 30 plus years. And I'm like, man, that is so great. I am so proud and happy for you that you're doing this, something you love deeply, and you're getting paid to do it. God bless you. But we were just, you know, I was putting quarters into his machine about the World Cup, things I didn't quite understand, offering my wild-ass opinions about, you know, what I was seeing out there on the pitch, because I'm only lightly informed, as you know, about soccer, but I'm very much into the World Cup. But it all came flooding back to me, the common sense of humor that three of us have. and had back in the day and all the incredible hours, multiple years and multiple hours, and me rooming with Heifetz in college. The three of us roomed together briefly out of college. I had a running series of Nintendo 64 ice hockey games with the two of them, where we would keep on a piece of paper written notes of the game, the time, and the score. It's like, well, my record against Lawrence is, I forget what it was. My record against Heifetz in this stupid video game was this. Every now and then, well, not every now and then, but one time I was fed up that Heifetz had pretty much gotten better at it than I was ever going to be, and I almost couldn't beat him. So he'd have these certain moves, these one-timers, and he would fucking beat me, and I got so pissed off, I just unplugged the machine. That was the only time he really got mad at me. He's like, come on, man, you can't do that. That's bullshit. But they were just such good times, and so I told the boys, I go, look, I'm embarrassed that I have not kept in touch with you. At the same time, I am delighted that we're talking right now, because these two guys, Aaron Heifetz, Scott Lawrence, were the nuclear foundation of my sports fandom and my sports professional sort of career in terms of everything, in terms of how I look at sports, in terms of my attitude and understanding of sports and my sense of humor. It's just, these guys are ground zero guys for me. They were so influential and beneficial. And I got a ton of stories I'd like to get out of them. And so I did ask. I said, boys, can you give me some time on the podcast, the two of you, and we can relive some old times and talk about stuff? And they said yes. Scott's first answer was, well, I got nothing to add to your podcast. And I go, bullshit. You got plenty to add. Because he's not in sports media anymore. Heifetz said, I don't normally do podcasts, but for you, I will. So I'm going to take that as a win. But I guess my plea to everyone would be, if you have floated away, like Wilson the volleyball in the movie Castaway, Wilson, with people that were foundational to you, important to you, or you just had great times with, fucking A, get a hold of them. Get on a text chain together with them, okay? Life is short, and these people are important in your life and in mine. And boy, do we have some good one-liners going on Saturday night. That's a wrap for me today. Thank you so much for listening. As always, rate and review. It tickles the algorithmic overlords. Even more importantly, tell a friend. Did you know that most new podcast listeners come from recommendations? I'm sick of all these sports podcasts. They're all lame. They're all too serious. They're not, pretty dumb. You got one that's good that I think I would like? Yeah, the Zabecast. Please recommend. Keep growing, Zabecast Nation. Also, you can subscribe if you would like to help contribute to the overall financial health of this podcast. You get Fridays with me and Scott and Solly, two later in my life foundational guys, because I got two big trios. You know, the me, Scott, and Solly trio is an echo of the me, Heifetz, and Scott Lawrence trio from in college. And I value each of those trios very much. But those guys on Friday with me, great show. We had the best show I think we've had in 5 years on Friday. You missed it if you're not a subscriber. And you get Monday through Thursday ad-free. And it's just an exorbitant $5 a month. I mean, who can afford $5 a month? Never raise the price once. Yeah, not like Netflix. Oh, fucking Netflix. Going through the roof. So subscribe by going to zabe.com/premium. That's it for me today. Thanks for listening. Have yourself a Cracker Jack Monday, and we will see you next time. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.